Welcome, one and all, with your host, Rolando, and his co-host, John. We are the Skeleton Boys.
Hello and welcome to the Skeleton Boys, a horror movie podcast. I'm Rolando.
And I'm Rolando.
And welcome to the show. This week we'll review Scream 2022. As always, John will give us the plot in five words. We'll give our first thoughts and then go to a deep spoiler analysis. But first, we're going to TV Corner for the last episode of Archive 81, episode 8, titled What Lies Beneath.
Yeah, and What Lies Beneath is just unsatisfying.
I know.
Like a college sexual experience. It leaves you unsatisfied and very confused.
Yeah, I think we have, over the last couple of weeks here, we've slowly
we're going to say the same thing at the same time. Slowly wasted our time.
Yeah. Yeah, this was underwhelming, to say the least. Did you want to just give your thoughts on the episode, and then maybe we'll just talk about the show?
Yeah. So
overall,
you had randomly texted me when you had finished the episode. And you told me, like, oh, it, like, I had called, it, like, leaves you on a cliffhanger.
Yeah.
And I hadn't seen that yet. And what's funny is, I stopped watching the episode 8 minutes before it finished. But because I was like, I'm going to bed. I was like, I'm going to bed. And I looked at it, I was like, oh, there's only 8 minutes left. I'm like, I don't have the energy for this shit. And then you sent me that text. And I was like, oh, man.
I thought you had already seen it. So I was like, okay, he already saw it. So it's safe to send a text because we try not to talk about what it is we're going to review before the show. So it's, you know, fresh. We could have like natural responses. But
it's super funny because when you sent me that text, I had stopped right when she pops back into the present day and sees her mom.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't watch the fucking part where he's stuck in the past, which makes perfect sense, right? Fucking stupid show. Sorry. We're doing stuff. Archive 81 also means, Archive 81 represents the podcast and the show. Oh, okay. There is your explanation.
Yeah. I think I like the core idea of a cult worshiping some sort of other demon, right? That part was freaking cool. How everything else was unsatisfyingly developed. Yeah. I think that this episode was Dan having to save Melody. That's where we left it, right? That Melody's trapped.
Yeah, and luckily her friend Annabelle, who doesn't age, was able to help him. I mean, I was expecting
him to
save her, only to find out that she is a new reincarnation of this fucking demon thing. And I thought that Annabelle was already influenced by that. And I was like, whoa, this is going to be so fun. It's going to be so good. I'm like, no, you do not get that satisfaction. Demon guy does literally nothing the entire series. He is just there to look like, is it aliens? No. Fuck, what is it? There's like some science fiction movie that has a very similar looking, like it's an alien, but it looks like this demon. I just can't think of it. Oh, it looks like the fucking aliens from Independence Day.
Yeah, that's a good call. That's a good call. And to me, the way they describe this creature is that he just sounds like he wants another. He just wants a friend because he just keeps people there with them on the unknown. Yeah, it's so just sad. Lonely guy.
He's a representation of because like his thing is like he keeps spreading this mold, you know, and it's probably like people are like, ew.
Yeah.
So he's a representation of like the stinky kid in school that like the kid, it's not the kid's fault. He's stinky, but of course he's going to get bullied and nobody wants to be with him. So, you know,
because that's one of the things they note is that when you go to the unknown, that he will keep you there because he wants to keep you there for reasons. Like he wants to, and I scored 1,000 points because I called that was her mom.
Yeah, that was a good call. Yeah, I remember that. in fact, when I was looking at her, I was like, oh shit, that's her mom. Then I was like, wait, did Rolando just say that, or was this mentioned in an episode before? Because I feel like we knew this already, right?
Yeah,
that's how much I paid attention.
Yeah, no, they made it like big reveal that was the mom, and apparently she does some like witchy mumbo jumbo that she's the key to open the portal. That's why Samuel was trying to use Melody as part of the ritual or whatever, because he knew that the mother was also some sort of key witch, does mumbo jumbo and able to open this portal automatically. Yeah. Right. That's the gist of it. Yeah.
I will say, I hate that Freddy Krueger ending. I was like, that's stupid. Cause where was, what's his face? Where was Samuel at the end?
Yeah, that's right. He didn't pop up. Right.
It doesn't make any sense that like she like just appeared there. So he had to have just appeared there too, unless mom was like, oh, scram, guy. And then he ran away. Maybe that's what happened. She was like, scram, sucker.
So Annabelle had more footage, which Dan looks at, right? And that, which is the rest of the seance they go through, which shows Melody, Sam.
Which also, yeah, Melody gave those tapes to Annabelle because Melody is now a nun. And before she went to oh my god, I was gonna say a convict. before she was gonna go and do her nunnery duties, she presented the tapes to Annabelle, who's in a crazy hospital.
Right.
I was like, you keep these, because that makes sense.
You crazy person, you keep these. And yeah, and that kind of talks about. In the previous episode, we saw Iris, you know, do the thing and then get some like poor light CG effects come, and then Iris gets taken away, and then Sam also summons the poor CGI effects.
Gives me a theory that they are actually underwater the entire time, and that's an oxygen bubble a la Aquaman, because it looks exactly the same. So,
yeah.
Blow your mind there a little.
So the Samuel and Melody join Iris in wherever the unknown or something like that. One thing that kind of like, I don't remember them explicitly explaining was, why is it that the mother is lurking around there? And if she could open the portal, why didn't she do it sooner?
Yeah.
We just writing it away?
She needed... she needed Dan, I think, for reasons. Like Dan.
Why did
Dan also has some sort of gift, I think, is the idea.
Oh God, you can't see this, but my eyes are rolling so hard in the back of my head.
Exactly. I think that's the idea. And there's like a strong connection between Dan and like that's the only reason he was able to talk to Melody. And the other confusing thing is, like, they had this whole conversation. Like, I feel like it was half an episode about how, imagine you're stuck in a moment in time, and it's just like that all the time or whatever. So what was with all this weird fucking slow-mo shit where they're going through, like, different rooms that turn into different places, and then Dan wakes up in the past and is now Melody? Question mark.
So, yeah.
Unless
so,
this was setting up the Quantum Leap revamp, then I would fucking love the series. I would rewatch it, realizing...
So he's a woman now. Yeah.
I'd rewatch it, realizing that Mark, right, the friend, is actually the new Ziggy.
Yeah. It's like a backdoor pilot for Quantum Leap series.
I mean, I would love the series if that was the case. Like, you know what? This is pretty good, actually. But no such luck.
and don't they... Doesn't the mom explicitly tell Dan, you can only have 5 minutes there. If you stay any longer than 5 minutes, you'll be stuck there forever. And then he spends like 20 minutes with his parents or something,
yeah,
right?
Because like, I don't know if you saw, but when he looked at his watch, time slowed down like a lot, like tremendously.
Oh, yeah. You can't see this, but my eyes are rolling in the back of my head.
That's why everything was so slow moving for them until he woke up in the past and then everything was normal again.
Because so he ends up getting... He ends up saving Melody and she's listening to some Joy Division.
Well,
and
technically... Samuel saved Melody.
Oh.
Right?
What?
Because Samuel did the Freddy Krueger grab her last second as like a scare, and then that kind of saved her. Not really. Dan just got stuck instead of running after her. He was just like, oh no. And then passed out.
Yeah.
Because that's the logical thing
Melody,
to do.
So Melody was able to get out and be with her mom. And they're like, they're so happy to be with each other. And they look around like, oh, wait, where's Dad?
I know.
They forgot Dad.
Yeah, it took.
Dad is missing.
It took fucking best friend Mark, who seemed to be the only person that cared about Dan in this entire series. Even though I was trying to call, he was one of the bad guys, which would have been a great twist, too. His only guy that's like, no, where the fuck is Dan? I'm like, there you go.
Who? Yeah. Oh. Who's that?
Like, oh, do you mean the guy I shared a Fanta with? That should have been the line.
Spot on, Melody. So Dan, that's, I guess, the setup for season two. Dan is stuck in the past.
Yes.
So now Melody has to go save him. But he's not going to. He's not going to, because there will be no season two. Netflix canceled the show. So
thank
there you go.
The higher powers.
I think that's a good call. That's a good call.
No.
That the show was canceled.
Which brings up a question. I think this is a good example of a question you wanted to ask, right?
Sure. What was it?
Whether a horror movie is good or a horror show is good.
Mm-hmm.
If it doesn't scare you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which, I mean, that was... say the question the way you said it, though. I feel like I phrased that stupid.
Okay, so yeah. I wanted to have a discussion, and I shot it out to some of our friends, and I got some responses back, and I'll share them on the show to kind of, like, you know, discuss it more lively. But the group question is, is a horror movie good if it doesn't scare you? So this question came upon when it was kind of pointed out to me, like on a popular writer says that she hates it when people say that movie wasn't good because it wasn't scary. And that kind of rings true, because a lot of people, and I guess what I'm trying to hone in on is, I've heard that complaint before. Oh, that movie sucked because it wasn't scary, right? That's always like a common way to get out of horror movies, right? But I think that it's an interesting question, because horror movies are, I think, intended to be subversive, to in its most like minimum form, scare you, right?
Yeah.
And if it doesn't scare you, is it good?
Right.
And I can read a couple of responses from our friends.
Because I do have a pretty strong opinion about but I'll answer the question a bit.
Okay, cool. And so we reached out to our group chat that we have.
That we've had since 2008, I think. I don't know. Yeah,
dude, it's been open for a while. Yeah. This came from Paul, and he said, depends. I'll say as long as you get something out of it, doesn't necessarily have to scare you. Necessarily have to be scary, is what he said. And I reached out to a friend of the show, George Chapa. And if you haven't checked out his last episode, we're on it, by the way. George's Isolation Podcast.
We all get nude.
Check it out. Yep. Really good dude. We did the whole show nude. So if you want to, he also has it up on YouTube if you want to see it.
Our responses are naked is what I'm trying to say. We're not actually physically nude.
There it is. No, no, no.
From the waist down, was, but nobody's ever going to see that, so it doesn't matter.
And so George, I asked George the same question and he got back to us and he said, yes, some of the best horror movies didn't scare me. They left me thinking about what if for days after I watched them. The Witch was one of those that wasn't too scary, but thought provoking, as well as Shutter Island. So he goes and names The Witch and Shutter Island as movies that he found.
Sorry, The Witch sucked.
That were thought provoking.
Yeah, Shutter Island. I like that one.
He found them to be very thought-provoking, but not necessarily like scary. And I actually 100% agree with him on the example of Shutter Island. That's a movie I went to watch in the theater and immediately figuring out the twist. Like within the first 5 minutes, I already knew what the twist was. So I was able to like sit back and just watch the movie for what it was. And I found it to be heartbreaking, uncomfortable, mind-bending. Like it's probably one of my favorite Scorsese movies and probably one of his underappreciated movies, because he's really doing something like out, like something you could tell he's a big fan of. This type of psychological horror that he did with Shutter Island.
What a sad but kind of a happy ending, really, for our protagonist, who's ultimately the antagonist. You know, because what did you take away from that when they're going to kill him, right? This was like their last chance to try to save him and bring him back to reality. I think he is brought back to reality. I think he does understand what he did, but he's just going to continue to fake that he's unaware, because what does he say? You know, sometimes not knowing is better, or something like that. Like just not seeing the truth.
Something like that, yeah.
So he'd rather just die not remembering, even though he probably still remembers.
Because of, because the truth is so much scarier than anything he was able to make up. Because it was a past that he couldn't really reconcile because of his wife's insanity and losing his child and all that. Like, all of that was...
I bet you say it's a...
No, yeah, all of that.
PTSD too.
No. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That movie would like was. I remember watching it and being really deeply affected by it. So now that. So now, what did you in the group chat? You did respond and you said yes and no. So I would like to for you to elaborate on your
Your comment. On that answer, I will elaborate. Was just being a jerk to be funny, but I was gonna say I do understand people's gripes, because most of the time people go watch a horror movie because they just want to have fun and get scared and not think, and just like that's what like their reality is in a movie theater for like an hour and a half to 2 hours. But when people see movies that I think are really good, for example, The Night House is really not scary at all, but it's fucking great. You know, I think I can relate it to music. You know, you're always going to get like the purists that are just older people saying like, no, this isn't fucking rock and roll. Rock and roll is this, or, you know, because I've done that with certain bands and it's just like, that's not fair. You know, like people got to keep changing it or else it gets boring and it becomes the same fucking stale stuff. So they got to reach out and try to make something different.
Yeah.
So that's my answer. I think, a horror movie can be good and not be scary.
People. Yeah. No, yeah, I think that is true. I think that is could we argue that both are true? Both are correct? There's it's not really like taking sides, right? I mean, I think a lot of people, I think that a lot of it has to do with the fact that there's marketing, right? Like when people see trailers, I remember very vividly certain trailers, like The Others, right?
Oh, yeah.
When they have that trailer. Yeah.
It's a good example.
Which is not at all. It is. Yeah, that they totally amped up the quote unquote scare factor of that, right? Because they have that classic scene where you see a dead, some sort of creature, or you see like Nicole Kidman's talking to somebody's like, I am your daughter, right? And it's like this really like fucked up looking, ghostly looking creature or something in the trailer. And you think, oh my God, this movie's gonna be fucked up, right? But it's not at all like that.
It's actually a very. It's just Ted.
It's actually a very, and I think a lot of people were disappointed by that, right? Like that it wasn't this.
I don't think people know that the people that cut trailers are like the people that actually are on production for these films have nothing to do. It's a whole separate group of people that cut these trailers together and get this footage. It's not even the same editors half the time.
Exactly. Yeah. Like people have certain expectations when they watch a horror movie because of how they're marketed, right? Because people think that people want to go to the movies because they want to get scared. They want to go cry. They want to fall in love. They want to see something different something enlightened about the world. You know what I mean? There's always different reasons why people come to movies. I think that setting those expectations, and then setting those certain expectations on horror movies that, oh, I'm going to be scared. And then when you go watch a movie and it's nothing like it,
it kind of
feels disingenuous, right? It kind of feels like the audience is kind of like, this isn't what I thought I was paying to see.
Yeah,
so
it's true. I feel like there's a good case in point in our current movie that we're going to review. But absolutely. I agree with that 100%.
Yeah. And because I just like what I've said many times, like, one of our doing the show, we found so many different types of horror movies and and we've seen so many like new filmmakers, and the stuff they're doing is like not what the last generation did, or like the 80s or 70s or those guys, right? They're taking new ways to tell a ghost story, or, you know, alien story, horror story. They're telling new ways to tell these stories, and they're adding their personal touch to it. I think horror. Some of the best horror right now is personal. They're writing it very from you know, personal story. And there's some, like, we can go on and on about, like, you know, new movies that took us by surprise. And those, to me, those are the best ones. Those have been the best things we've found on this show. There's the small ones.
And again, this is all personal taste too. Like, it's surprising how we reviewed a handful of very classic movies that neither of us have seen. Just by like word of mouth and like reviews by fans and the trailers we see, we're expecting like fucking some amazing crap. But like Salem's Lot sucked. The Prowler kind of sucked. But then other ones where I've seen the trailer and I'm like, I don't think I'm going to be, because it's not my thing. Like, I don't think I'm ever going to like this. Black Christmas was fucking awesome. Yeah, and I was expecting it to be shitty. Like, I wasn't looking forward to watching it. And then I start watching, I'm like, holy shit, this is exactly my type of film.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, no, exactly. I think that's a continuing, that's a good question to kind of throw out there, you know? Like, what makes a horror movie good, you know?
Yeah.
Is it? And I think it has a lot to do with what you bring to it, right?
Yeah.
What you want out of it. Like, sort of similar to what Paul said.
Like, I kind of hate that I started gatekeeping certain things, and I'm like, oh, it's just a jump scare movie. Like, no, jump scares are good too. I mean, it's just a part of the whole thing. Like, it's a part of the horror family. Like, jump scares are good. Mm-hmm. Does that make it a good horror movie? Yeah, sometimes. Gore, it's not for everybody, but does it make it a good horror movie? Yeah. I mean, Psycho Gore Man is very gory. It's really fucking funny. It's great. Like, are sex scenes necessary in films? You know, you want to say no, but then we watch a little movie called The Editor, and it's like, yeah, if you have like sex scenes going on in the background for no reason, it could be really funny.
Yeah, and I think that it's all context, right? Like, I would probably say that when we were younger, we were like, yes, yeah, sex scenes. Like, yeah, let's see sex scenes. You know what I mean? Let's watch, you know, boobs and gore and knives and blood. And to be honest, now I find a lot of that stuff over the top or gratuitous. You know, like, it's not something I care about anymore. So
yeah, because for me, if you're gonna just keep showing like boobs and like bush or whatever, I'm a firm believer now, like, then show that guy's fucking dong, who cares? But the thing is, like,
yeah,
understandably, a lot of these actors probably aren't well endowed, right? So they don't want to hang dong. So does it make it fair? No, not at all.
And we're a Puritan society too, right? Yeah. Like, we're all we're all very shocked and appalled by dicks and, you know, boobs and stuff. So
yeah.
And I guess, I don't know. It goes back to that argument, you know, and people, for whatever reason, our society feels uncomfortable with those things, right? When it comes to cinema, art. So.
Yeah. Which I'm starting to see is slowly changing with these new generations coming out. Which I could go on and on about how we grew up in a time where it's like, you got to work hard or else you're fucking lazy or you're not useful or like you're just a bad person. And, you know, you work yourself to death for what? Really nothing. Like, it doesn't fucking matter. You're expendable.
Yeah.
And some of these younger people are like, no, I'm not fucking doing that. And, you know, older people get upset, like, well, we worked hard. And I'm on the page of like, good for them, man. I wish I was like, you know, if there was enough people backing me up going like, nah, we're not going to fucking do that, then that would have been great. But that's just not the world we were in.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you. This generation is very settled on doing whatever they want, which is... for better or for worse.
For better or for worse. We'll find out, right?
We'll find out.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
All right. We're ready to jump into this classic.
Yes. John. Well, okay. We're going to move on to our main review of Scream. Should I call this Scream 5 or Scream 2022?
You have
to decide right now what this movie's going to be called.
I think it should be called
No Pressure.
Scream, not at all affiliated with Wes Craven. Let's make that clear. Not affiliated with Wes Craven. That's the title we should go with.
Scream, not affiliated with Wes Craven. I love it. We'll do that. John, do you want to give us the plot in 5 words?
Johnny.
5 words.
Plot summary.
Rolando, drum roll, please.
Let's do it. For Scream. Not affiliated with Wes Craven. Johnny's 5-word plot summary. Coming in at number 3. Movie police bad at policing.
Yeah.
Dude.
It's a pretty bad cop.
There's like a couple of cops and then one is dead because nobody can, I don't want to like spoil it, but like nobody can fucking fight these people.
Yeah.
Which was very confusing to me. Coming in at number 2, tired aging actors want death. I think that spoils the second episode.
We can talk about it in spoilers.
And coming in at number one, fan film misses the point. All right. So that's my 5-word reviews for Scream.
Fan film misses the point. Ow. Ow. Somebody needs some aloe vera for that burn. Jeez.
Now they're already deep. They're already extra crispy by this point. Let's put it that way.
So I surmise you didn't like this movie.
Oh, let me tell you.
So... let's.
It was like fine. It was fine, and then I started rolling my eyes, and then I couldn't see anything anymore because my pupils were directly looking at my brain.
We could generally and talk about this movie in general, how we felt about it, I think, and then we can get into spoilers. I think we talk about when we're able to talk about freely about the killers and everything, it'll be like much easier to kind of go. So if you just want to give me just first, just give me your initial thoughts and everything, and then we can talk about that for a little bit, and then we'll get into the spoilers.
I was okay. I feel like for a little while in the movie, I was like okay with it. Even though it did feel like a regurgitation that these two writers and directors were like trying to fucking bring back like the old Scream movie again, right? Because this would be the fucking third time that they've tried to redo the first movie, sort of, right? Well, I guess they don't really do that in the second one, but they did do it in the third one and the fourth one, where they try to redo the same exact beginning from the first film.
Okay,
even though there's a movie. So, because in the second film, I guess it was more of like Stab, the movie is introduced, right, to the universe, which is basically Scream, which was really clever, right? Like Wes Craven knew exactly what type of movies he was trying to make. They're spoof films. And then he made a spoof film inside of a spoof film, which I thought was fucking genius. It was super, like, great.
Yeah.
And then the third one, for me, felt a little weak, but it was something different. And I think that was the point, too.
Right.
This one, it felt like they were really trying hard to be like, this is what Wes Craven would have done. I'm like, no, I think he would have stopped making them. The fourth one, right? The fourth one was actually okay.
Okay, yeah.
What did you think about the fourth one?
Okay, so I spent the week screaming. I started with Scream, and I watched, you know, the entire series up until 5. And I will say, I think Scream, the original, the 1996 version, is a masterpiece. I didn't know this at the time, but I think it's a masterpiece in horror. And I will not hear any slander on that movie in this podcast. That movie, it is an absolute stone-cold masterpiece. I don't think it gets as much credit. I think it's kind of forgotten. I think the people who love it, but it should be, in my opinion, in the upper echelons of, like, talked about in terms of like Halloween's, talked about, you know, Friday 13th, Nightmare on Elm Street, stuff like that. This movie is, my opinion, up there. It's a game-changing movie. That said, right. I think 2 works incredibly well. I was like, man, I am really digging the sequel. I remember watching it when it first came. I watched all these movies when they first came out. That's how old I was. And 2, I remember not liking very much. Rewatching it, I really liked it up until the reveal who the killers are. I thought it felt a little tacked on and not as clever. I think you get diminishing returns on the twist on who the killers are. Every movie felt a little less, in my opinion.
Which I was going to say, I think the intention, real quick, is so Wes Craven directed the first
four.
Right? And then obviously he didn't do this one because he has passed. Legend horror icon has passed. Because Wes Craven, which I hope our audience understands, is like legendary horror director, did fucking Nightmare on Elm Street, did Last House on the Left, did Hills Have Eyes, right?
Yeah.
So
he is absolutely, he did all these movies. Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, sorry, what?
No, I was going to say, like, no, go ahead. Sorry. <you're>, go
ahead. he wrote these movies, or like helped write these movies to get a certain point across, you know, had these fucking amazing ideas. And the Scream films, for people that maybe are unaware, are supposed to be a sort of a cumulative spoof film of all the films he's done before. That was his intention. So every time you see like the second one, like the ending, or like it feels like weak, or it's like that was kind of dumb, it's because he's like trying to spoof himself every time.
Yeah. I think
just why I hate this fifth one.
We'll get to the fifth one. I think that I really feel like if you want to watch Wes Craven, I think at his most, he's just on fire on the first Scream movie. He's perfectly blending comedy, horror, scare tropes. He's making like amazing mainstream movie, which I think sometimes mainstream movies get kind of a dirty, or is it treated like a dirty word, right? but I think he's on fire in this movie. He's just like, he just has this control and is just a master in this movie. Like, he's just on top of his craft, I think, in Scream. Like, everything he does and every choice he makes, I think, is just the right choice. And that's continued, and I think also in 2, up until the ending, like I said. And even 3 also, I hear, gets a lot of shit. And yeah, it's not as sharp and it's not as clever. But I think that movie also has a lot of balls because they literally have a Harvey Weinstein character in their movie.
Yeah.
You know, they have a sleazy producer.
Can we time out for just like 2 minutes? And I'm back. Like, nothing happened.
Nothing happened.
So you're going to tell me that the pinnacle of Wes Craven's career was not Vampire in Brooklyn.
Wow. Yeah. No. Yeah. And I think 3 also does a really good job of wrapping up the franchise. Like, it does a really good job of making that a complete trilogy. And even though there's it's, you know, it's maybe not the best in the bunch or whatever, it's treated like the best in the bunch. I think there's a lot there that I think goes underappreciated. As far as the fourth one, this is the one that they really tried to, like, this is a reboot. This is the one we're going to go back and try to, you know, start with the new fresh kids, you know, try to like make a reboot sequel thing that I personally didn't feel. I was left a little unsatisfied with it. And because it felt like a retread, and sometimes when you try to make too many copies of the same thing, it becomes less of. And I didn't think it was as, I was less satisfied with it as a whole.
See, that's, I did enjoy it.
I thought it was okay. I was mixed on it. I was pretty much mixed. I did like the little twist about that her cousin is the killer and she's doing it because she wants to be the new Sidney Prescott.
Right.
And they kind of walk you through that, which I thought was kind of interesting. But leading up to that, I thought it was pretty much by the numbers Scream reboot.
Right.
Which kind of worked, kind of didn't work for me.
Yeah. I mean, I thought that was a ballsy thing too, because I think that was the complete intention. Is I think Wes Craven saw people remaking his films and being like, you just rehashed my movie in like a shittier way. So I think that's what he was thinking when he was writing the script.
And as far as this last Scream movie, this one that we're reviewing today, I'm going to say I really liked it. I really, really well liked it. I thought it's a really solid entry. This movie is given the Force Awakens treatment. Mm-hmm. Like, it gives all of our old, you know, returns all of the old cast, all the heroes, and it sort of gives them one last sort of parade around, and they get to be you know, basically integral to the part, and then they start telling a new story with new characters, sort of a handoff, right? This is the handoff movie to the next group of characters, which actually I really enjoyed. I first, about the original cast, I love in this movie that they're literally like, you have Sidney Prescott saying like to Ghostface, you know, I'm bored. you know, I'm bored. I'm, you know, like she's saying like, I've seen this all and you're the most derivative of all of them. And I like that, you know, Gail Weathers, even though they had sort of a tumultuous relationship in the first movie, they're like basically seasoned veterans returning back to this franchise. And they're so done with these movies, you know what I mean? Like, there's so many instances. I kind of like that they're kind of like, are like these veterans of the movie and stuff like that. Now, as far as the new people, I actually had a harder time getting into the new people. I wasn't so hot about everybody.
Yeah,
until maybe the latter half. I had a hard time liking the people because it seemed like they were just retreads of the first movie again, which is what's called Scream, right? So it's like,
yeah, and would you understand these
basically
characters
carbon copies? Yeah.
would you understand these characters if you hadn't seen the first movie? They don't have any fucking story arcs. None of them do.
They don't. Yeah, like, absolutely. No, I agree.
You just know who they are because you've seen the first four movies.
Like, right.
Otherwise, and the same thing with the returning characters. Like, I enjoyed their little, like, spats and stuff. But the only person that had any sort of real story was Dewey, and I was actually really into it. And then
I agree.
Wait!
No, don't say that part!
Oh, yeah, yeah. <We're> not,
don't say that part. We'll get there. We'll get there. No. I completely agree with you. But we'll talk about that part in spoilers. Hopefully I remember the editor's note. See if I can bleep you out. I think that... But I really like, I mean, to me, what did you think of, like, Sidney Prescott saying, I'm Sidney fucking Prescott. Of course I have a gun. That's like one of the, like, best lines. Like, I really feel like the writers and the director of this movies are the first to tackle it without Wes Craven or Kevin Williamson, I think. He didn't have anything to do with these movies. And they're kind of like the godfathers of this series. And they enter this as fans. And I feel like they have to do a lot of setup and figure out these characters. And I feel like the latter half is when it finally like breaks loose and they're having so much fun. Cause now they can talk and do all the things that they want to get to. And I feel like the movie gets more lively as it progresses. Now let's talk about, what did you think of the first, the introduction again, the sort of like cold open with, the call to the house. What did you think of that?
That's when I started thinking, like, this feels like, obviously these guys are fans of the series, but they obviously didn't know what was going on in Kevin and Wes's minds, really, you know? So this felt like a fan service film as opposed to like a spoof on like classic thrillers and slasher flicks. So I didn't like it. I was, like Sidney Prescott said, by that point I was bored. But then, like, when it got out of that, I was like, okay, let's see what's happening with these characters, because, you know, this isn't a spoiler because it happens at the beginning, but, like, well, one of the kids gets stabbed, like, right away, but doesn't die, which is like, okay, this makes a little bit of sense, sort of, you know?
That's actually one of the things I loved about the movie. That's their first little, like, twist, is that the first person in the movie always dies, right? Yeah. The first person that takes the call always dies, and she didn't. She didn't die. That was like a nice little inversion, a little change of pace. And I think that you have Jenny Ortega as the actress. And I think she does a phenomenal job. But the stuff that really sold me was when Ghostface is actually in the house now. And he goes and he just breaks her ankle. And I don't think we had ever seen something so gruesome in these Scream movies before. We've seen, of course, a lot of stabbings, a lot of shootings.
TV to the head.
You know, a lot of guts spilling out. TV to the head, slicing the throat, but we've never actually seen something as brutal as somebody just snapping this poor little tiny girl's ankle. I was like, oh my God, like, who is this? And then he proceeds to stab her in the hand, and they linger on that. So this is definitely a meaner, dirtier ghost face than we've seen before. And I thought that was a nice little introduction to this series.
What is her name? Melissa Barrera, right? I do. But mm-hmm. I kind of wish they had like switched roles, to be honest. Like, cause I really enjoyed Jenny Ortega's, like, I thought she was such a phenomenal actress. I was like really under her, like, mm-hmm. yeah. And I kind of just wish she had more screen time too.
I felt like Melissa Barrera's character, Sam, was hampered down a lot in the beginning. And so by the time...
To be a reveal, yeah.
And by the time we get to, you know, the end or whatever. So how do you feel about, like... So everybody that's in this movie that's getting killed has heritage to the first movie, right?
Right.
Do you think it's a spoiler if I reveal who her heritage is? Or should we save that?
No, because that kind of happens early on.
Okay. So her dad is... Billy Loomis, right?
Oh, let me. Oh, I was gonna say, let me spoil it. I was gonna say her dad is a de-aged CGI Skeet Ulrich.
Yeah, they de-aged the fuck out of him. So,
dude, and it's actually him too, which is like real sad that they de-aged it. Like, why? It doesn't matter.
I think he still looked good. I think he looked great. Like, I don't know. I think he looked pretty good.
I thought it looked bad, and it wasn't. And I know it's not just me, because a friend of mine talked to me about it before I had brought up I had seen it, and they're like, "Yeah, there's a two people actually were like, yeah, that guy comes back from the first one, and he's like a weird computer generated sort of thing. I don't think it's the actual actor. I think somebody just played him, and they like used old clips. And then I look it up. I'm like, no, it's actually him. It's just they de-aged him.
Yeah." I thought it was, I mean, I understand. I see what you guys are, what that impression was. You know, I get that. I was okay with it. I'm a little, these movies are so proper, so I just write it off to that. Like, so that part didn't bother me. But when I felt like Sam's character didn't come alive until probably the last half, and she's like literally like freaking, you know, shooting and stabbing the Ghostface killer and saying, never fuck with a daughter serial killer. Never fuck with a daughter serial killer. Like, these lines really resonated. I was like, fuck yeah, that's exactly what she should be saying, right? And I felt like it took her a while to kind of get to that point, you know? And it took a lot of these characters. Like, I was really happy and impressed with all the cast. I thought everybody was really, really good. Like, Jake Quaid. I really liked... I'm sorry, Jack. I always say Jake. The girl who played Mindy, Jasmine Savory. I don't see her last name. I probably should have opened the tab where it says her. Brown.
Brown.
I thought she was excellent in this movie. I even like, what is his name? Wes. I really liked all the characters. Go ahead.
I wish Marley Shelton had more screen time, because I was so happy she came back.
From the fourth movie,
you know, but they don't have too much for her to do.
She's very integral, kind of she's integral to a certain point,
because she's like one of my favorite blonde actresses, right? She was one of the, there's like a huge explosion of blonde actresses during the early aughts, right? She was one of them, with like Tara Reid and all these guys. She was like one of my favorites. So I was all excited to see her.
Cool. Do you have any other thoughts? Because I think it'll be better if we just sort of get into spoilers about it.
Let's just go at it, because I'm surprised you liked the movie and I like really hated it.
Okay, let's go to spoilers now.
Wait! No! Stop talking, guys. Stop the podcast. Please stop the podcast. Because we're about to go into spoilers.
So Dewey dies.
Dewey dies. And okay. I'm all for killing off like people like that so it could be a shock. But for me, that wasn't a fucking shock. It was like they set up these, you know, the original cast to be smarter than that, right? But he still gets, you know, blindsided by something that's happened before, and then gets royally fucking fucked up by a tiny statured person.
So,
you know,
each
of these people keep getting fucked up by like these people that are like, in the grand scheme of things, when you look at them, much weaker than each of these people.
I agree. And I feel like that's the diminishing return, that the people that they choose to end up being the killers are, the Ghostface, the killers are always portrayed as like super strong and handy with a knife and can disappear or reappear whenever they want. And when you see who they are, it's a little deflating. And I agree with you. Actually, I'm okay with Dewey dying because it means something, right? He gets the Han Solo.
Set up very well.
He gets the Han Solo treatment, but I agree with you. I 100% agree with you. I think they did him dirty in that. He did something kind of dumb, something he should have known. You know what I mean? And I think that's what you're trying to say. Like the way they killed them was kind of like he's making a really stupid decision. You know what I mean? And how he did it.
He's the only actor to come back to have any sort of story. So I was half expecting like, oh, they might give him like a hero's death. And he didn't get a fucking hero's death at all. He just dies a sad person. Just like, fuck that, dude.
Yeah, I agree. I think they could have done a little bit more. I think what they could have done is like maybe getting jumped by the Ghostface killer and then being stabbed or whatever. However, they decided to do it. Maybe they could have like Dewey could have like taken off the mask and seen the person. And we don't see the person, but maybe he saw the person and then like you see like a reaction in his face or something, right? Like that, like, oh, it's him or her, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like they could have given him something a little bit more, like you said, like a hero's death. And I think they did kind of do him dirty. I think you're absolutely right about that.
Because they could have easily have killed her. Like maybe they flew out a fucking window or something and they both die. They're like, oh, okay, it's over. But clearly there's two killers like there's been in every fucking movie, right? So I don't know. I just had a hard time with that. I also had a hard time, like, Gail comes back. There's no story for her. She's just kind of there.
Well, I mean, I really like that. What did they say to her? That they're like, Sydney's like, they're talking to Sam and Sydney says something like, I want you to help kill him. And you want me to help you and the host of a morning show commit murder. And they're both like, yes. I think that's just like, that's like a nice little, like, cause Scream's always been kind of tongue in cheek, right? Like there's always been a bit of humor to it. So I think that was a nice like moment. Cause it's a slap of reality, right? That even though we know Sydney and Gail are like, can do these things, right? They have killed people before and they will, right? That the fact that who they are in this show, who they are to Sam is not nearly, Sam doesn't know like the levels of it, right? But we as an audience, that's a nice audience joke, in other words.
You know, and I will say, so they try to rehash a lot of scenes from the first movie too, right? Like they all hang out outside in like the high school courtyard and they're just shooting the shit. Mm-hmm. Which I got to say, they finally started casting actors that look closer to that age instead of like, let's be real, the original cast of Scream look like they're in their 20s, even though they're in high school. But I felt like in the original cast or whatever, which, you know, I don't know how you can really compare to like fucking Matthew Lillard and Sarah Michelle Gellar and not even Sarah Michelle Gellar. Fuck, I'm fucking this up. Nev Campbell.
Yeah.
And Rose McGowan and right. Where they're all shooting the shit and talking. I felt like I believe that conversation a lot. That original conversation, because it was fun. Absolutely. And Matthew Lillard's being a dick and like, oh, how about you live her alone? You know, making like a stupid joke. And everybody's like, but it's also Matthew Lillard. He's fucking amazing.
And you're right. You're absolutely right. I kind of hated that they tried to show that scene again. Like they tried to like reenact that scene. I didn't like that scene.
Yeah, it was awkward.
No, I agree.
Like not personable. And then you have that random like bad boy actor show up and he's just kind of there to die. You know, he doesn't do anything else. He's just there to die. But I will say, I really enjoyed Mason Gooding, the jock character's sort of portrayal of like a average sort of American jock today. Not necessarily a bad guy, you know, just kind of focused on his muscles and stuff. And he actually makes a smart decision at the end until he feels bad.
I love that.
Right? I thought that was fucking great. That one I really enjoyed. Because I felt for him, I was like, oh man, he's just trying to be he realizes it was like probably he had the right idea, but then he felt bad.
Because he's trying to like he's making out with his like new girlfriend or something, right? And she's like, let's go to your room, right? They're having the house party.
Yeah.
And he's like, well, he's like, I don't think I want to go with you. Like, I don't know if you're the killer.
And then she leaves. Which is fair. Because like, she's upset, right?
I mean, yeah, for obvious reasons. She's upset. Yeah.
And then he's like, ah, fuck. So he goes and looks for her, even though he's like scared shitless. And then you feel bad for him when he dies.
you feel bad for him. Yeah. But did he die? I think he got injured only. It's another instance where I don't think he died. Did he?
No, I'm pretty sure he died because the new girlfriend found him. Remember?
Oh.
And she came back with blood on her hands. So they were like, oh, you're the bad guy until it's revealed that the smallest person in the fucking cast is the other killer.
No, well, Jenny Ortega is the smallest person in the cast. But the next smallest person is the killer. Yeah.
Which, you know, makes total sense for like the height differences every time you see Ghostface and all that. Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
That was another thing that bothered me. I'm like, how are they not realizing this person that's clearly like 5'4" is not one of the killers?
How did you feel about them tackling sort of internet toxic fanboy as the killer? Because we learned that Jack Quaid is like this obsessive stab fan and hates what they did with the 8th movie. And yeah. he says like, well, I'm going to fix the stab franchises, which is something,
I just want to point out Jack Quaid is 5'11" and, what's her name? Mikey Madison is, 5'3½.
Mm-hmm.
So trying to understand, and maybe she was wearing fucking lifts or something and going around and killing Dewey with ease.
Yeah. I mean, Laurie Metcalf is an older aged woman and she killed people too. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
So it's kind of like, I mean, it's like I said, I think there's diminishing returns on who the killers are. And I did like that they represented something that is prevalent in our fan culture, right? That
yeah.
The toxic fan who feels entitled.
So that's my, I don't think that would have worked if it wasn't Jack Quaid. I mean, I just think Jack Quaid's a good choice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so too. He had that killer line where he says, "What did he say that like it was easy to fuck you?" You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just like it was, which I thought like, dude, this guy, what a fucking dick thing to say, right? Like just to fucking.
Which also, full disclosure, Jack Quaid on Instagram ruined that he was a killer for me like a couple weeks.
Oh yeah. I didn't see where he spoiled it, but I kind of figured out through social media who the killers were.
Yeah.
Which I'm okay with. Like it kind of didn't really like harp in how I like saw the movie.
No.
You know, I had a lot of fun with it.
I actually thought it was clever because I didn't know who the other killer was yet. And I was having trouble trying to figure that out, which they did a good job because there's no indication that the other person, there's a lot pointing towards Jack Quaid, you know, and it's funny that they point that out. Like that was maybe the only Wes Craven thing in the movie is that line, Dewey calling it out right away.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that,
how long have you known this guy?
So that was good.
Yeah, no, it's, he completely nails who the killer is almost immediately. And I feel like, when Jack Quaid's delivered those lines and then like, and I think this is where I feel like Melissa Beretta's character just like comes to life when she's like, tells him like, no, like don't ever fuck with the serial killer's daughter. Like, and she just stabs the fucking shit out of him repeatedly over and over and over again. And then like shoots him several times and in the head. And I thought that was like, that was her moment. And I think she fucking nailed it.
Cause she slit his throat too. And that was badass. He has that line where it's like, oh, but what about my ending? And she's like, here's your fucking ending. And just like slits his throat. And I was like, yeah. So I really fucking enjoyed that part. Yeah, you're right. She like really fucking shined because she was allowed to act. I feel like the way they wrote her story to make it such a reveal that she's Billy Loomis's kid, which is like, that's fine. You know, it's not.
I'll give or take that. Yeah.
Yeah, because whatever. they've already kind of done that in the second movie, right? Like, oh, I'm your brother, Sydney. Like, oh, okay. You know, it's the same exact thing, except she's an illegitimate child, right? I just wish that they played her more like, I mean, they kind of did, but I feel like Neve Campbell was a little more slick in the first movie, a little quicker. She was a little quicker to be a little more like, oh, fuck this, I'm fighting back, which she kind of is in this movie, but not. Like, I kind of wish it was just more of her being like the way she was at the end, a little sooner. Not at the beginning, but a little sooner.
I agree. Yeah, she's actually one of my favorite parts in the first Scream movie. And I think that Neve Campbell does an excellent job of elevating a pretty boring character overall. Like, if you read this character on paper, I think she does a terrific job of giving her a lot of personality. And they did some amazing choices in the first one where she's not really a victim. Like, she's not scared. She fights back. She's not at all weak or portrayed weak or terrified. I think they did a really strong job in the first one. And And that sort of shines through it, through all the series, to the point where she's like the grizzled veteran now, right? She's been through this a million times.
Yeah. So I kind of wish they had done that more with Melissa, because, man, she was badass. So are you going to say if they do another one, I hope she comes back just a badass?
Well, I feel like I'm perfectly okay with it. Like, they are making a sixth one. I know that it's in production already. So I think that they should continue to, like, I know it's really important to Scream fans to have Sidney Prescott, to have Gail Weathers, to have these characters in the movies, but I think we could do with them less now, right? Because I feel like Melissa Barrera, Jenny Ortega, those actresses are more than fine enough to carry this franchise if you want to continue it, right?
Oh, and what's her name? The new Seth, not Seth Green, what's his name? Jamie Kennedy, what's her name? Brown.
Jamie Kennedy, yeah.
Jasmine Sawyer Brown, yeah.
She was excellent, too. She was really good. So bringing her back, I could definitely... I actually feel like they should lean more on these characters so we can kind of, you know, start phasing out some of the sort of icon characters.
Nev Campbell and... Courtney Cox died off screen in this one, I'm pretty sure. I'm like 100% certain they died off screen, because Courtney Cox got fucking shot and then got stabbed again. And then they just kind of hung out like with blankets over themselves to have a conversation at the end. So they weren't getting medical attention at all.
Yeah.
So I'm pretty sure they died, because Nev Campbell also got stabbed. But when Jasmine Savoy Brown got stabbed, she's immediately in an ambulance going away. She only got stabbed once, too, by the way.
Yeah, that was... there was a little bit of... they didn't really address the fact that Courtney Cox's character got shot
in
the stomach and stayed alive through the end of this movie and was casually sitting with blankets with Nev Campbell. I think I read that the director's intention was they wanted the emotions were more important than the reality of the scenes, which,
okay,
fine, whatever, that it was more important to have them upright and talking to each other and having that moment together, the end moment, right? Then Gail, like, insides bleeding out of her stomach and laying rest down in a hospital somewhere dying. It was less important to them, which, I mean, it's a choice, right? It's their choice.
Yeah. And I'm glad. I mean, I guess it was satisfying to see her kill Miss Tiny Mikey, right? Finally, even though Mikey keeps getting the better of these two adult badass women. Just because.
That is one of my favorite scenes as well.
Because she killed Dewey, where, which I wish there was more, like, they kind of hint, right, at Dewey was a person to break things off with Gail.
They did. Yeah, he confesses that he wasn't able to deal with the fact that she wasn't there. Like, he couldn't accept her going off and doing something different. Like, he was too insecure. It was his own insecurities, because he was insecure with the fact that he was just always going to be in that town. He was never going to leave. And he felt like he wasn't good enough for Gail, because Gail wanted to have go and have like her career. So,
all right, here's my fan ending. Dewey immediately after all that conversation is like, man, fuck this. Like, why am I even bothering? It just leaves. Even though Nev Campbell, like, is a reason that he decides to go, right? Because Nev is like, I'm just happy that they're safe because they're with you. He leaves. They're all about to die, and Dewey comes back and says, fuck this shit, and shoots them both. Bam! Dewey's a hero again.
Yeah, I mean, I think that I'm okay with, like, Dewey going or whatever, and I'm okay with that, I didn't like the way it ended. Plus, I feel like this movie is about these three characters.
Yeah.
As much as like it's about Nev Campbell, Sidney Prescott, or whatever, like, she's the star of this franchise. Like, it's the three of them, right? It's really the three of them that have been elevated into like the top tier of this franchise. And I feel like, you know, I would have liked to see all three of them continue, to be completely honest. But I'm okay with killing a legacy character for stakes. Like, yeah. Like I was completely heartbroken when Han Solo died. Right. And then, so, but I will not have Chewbacca die. He cannot die in these movies. I will never watch Star Wars again if they kill Chewie.
Even though he's like 1500 years old at this point.
Maybe older than that. Yeah. But yeah, so yeah, we've been going pretty long here. Did you have any last thoughts?
Yes, I only enjoyed parts of this movie. I'm probably never going to rewatch it.
Nice. I think that I am legit after spending the entire week watching the whole franchise. I am actually a really big fan of this franchise, and I am pretty happy with the first, Wes Craven-less feature, you know? I think they did some good things. I think they have things that they can improve upon. But overall, I think they did a good job of honoring the legacy characters and then setting up new characters. And there's a lot of really interesting actors they cast in this. So I'm really excited to see what they do with Scream 6 or whatever. What would it be now? It'd be Scream 2? Scream? I don't even know what we're doing now.
Well, I don't know why the numbering. They should call it Screams, right?
Screaming.
Aliens. Screams.
Aliens, yeah. Screams. All righty. John, how many sexy spooky bones do you want to give it?
How many sexy spooky bones will you give it? Sexy bones. Ooh, sexy bones. Well, I know what you need. Show us your sexy spooky bones.
No, wait, don't do that. Just rate the movie.
I'm gonna give Scream 5 screaming spooky bones.
Excellent. I'm gonna give Scream 2022. 8.5 sexy spooky bones. Just like the movie, 8.5. It's really sexy. So I think that, like I said, there's things that they can improve upon, but I'm more or less happy as now. I think I'm a Scream fan. So.
Oh, nice. I mean, I've been a fan of Scream, so that's great. It's good news.
I'm definitely appreciating it like on a new level. So.
Oh, also, right. We haven't even mentioned the soundtracks. I mean, this one doesn't do it any service. That kind of pissed me off too. The first two soundtracks for the Scream, which wouldn't fly now, were like the introduction for nu metal for a lot of fucking people. The second Scream had System of a Down. Mm-hmm. That's when people fucking heard of System of a Down finally, with Spiders. Slipknot's Wait and Bleed came out on that soundtrack. That made them blow up. Like, I don't know. There's a nostalgic little soft spot.
Interesting. I had to revisit the soundtracks. Because you're right. There's a lot of really good, like, iconic music. Like, they have the Nick Cave song, right? The Red Riding Hood, I think, right? His cover of it or his version of it. It's really good. Really cool. All right, guys and gals and non-binary pals, thank you for listening. And as always,
stay spooky.
Skeleton crew, it's time. The boys say goodbye. We love all of you. We really have to go poo. We'll miss you, but it's time for us to...